welcome to the Hometown Real Estate Heroes Podcast. My name is Mitch Steven, and I am the founder, the sponsor, and sometimes even the host of this podcast. And this podcast is designed specifically to help you achieve your financial freedom, no matter where you have to go to find that independence. Our mission is to help you fire your boss and quit your job so that you can free up 2,600 hours a year to find out who you're supposed to be and to become the person you are supposed to become on this planet. So I invite you to subscribe, like, and share so that you can watch others that are on their way or have already accomplished this financial independence and are well on their way to becoming the person they are supposed to be. If you know of a guest that should be on this podcast, please go to 1000houses.com. That's 1000houses.com/podcast2. That's the number 2, /apply.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Hometown Real Estate Heroes. Today, we are talking to Brian Fine. He is from Coast to Coast Turnkey LLC. So we're going to learn a little bit about his real estate business and what makes him tick. So welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. So first of all, go ahead. Tell us a little bit about yourself and then share your story. What made you decide to start this business? What was the need you saw?
Yeah. So I've been in real estate for about since about 2009, when my wife and I we were flat broke living in mom's basement, and we heard one of those advertisements on the radio. You know, learn how to flip houses, just cut us a big check. They didn't say that part on the radio, so we went and we blew our life savings on one of those education programs, and it actually went great. That's probably not something you hear from a lot of people. We loved it. Right. We ended up flipping over the next couple of years, probably, I don't know, a little over 100 houses retail. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work too. In 2017, I think I did 36 of those.
Oh, wow.
And I don't recommend that to anybody. That's your lesson from that. Don't do that many.
Okay.
Then next year we did quite a few less and made more money actually. But after doing that for a bunch of years and going through all the ups and downs of being a house flipper and buying, fixing, and selling, my wife got pregnant with our first kid. And our business partner's spouse unfortunately passed away all at the same time.
Oh, wow.
So we thought, okay, maybe we ought to take a couple of months off this whole business thing and do life.
Right.
try to figure our lives out a bit. And at the time, we had 11 ongoing renovations.
Oh, my goodness.
And all of them with the same lender.
Okay.
And so it was all good. That lender was actually, we had a great relationship with them, worked very well. It was a hard money lender, so not the cheapest money in the world. But they would extend our loans for 6 months for 1 point. So it was pretty reasonable, right? So we just did some math. We figured out our equity in the deals. We're like, yeah, I got an easy 12 to 18 months on this before I even break even. So we thought, okay, we're going to take at least 6 months off. So with that planned, we started going about our lives. And I was traveling around a little bit and doing some speaking and that kind of thing. And I got off a plane in Detroit. And I got a bunch of emails. JP Morgan had bought our lender.
Oh.
Every one of those extensions was at the lender's discretion. They denied them all, and I got 11 notices of foreclosure.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
So that kind of hurt.
Yeah.
We called them up and, like, what can we do here? You know, because you just called default on 11 notes. We had to refi out as fast as we could. And if you've ever had to refi a property very quickly, that does not mean you get the best terms in the world. It means you get it done. And between my partner and I, we had to bring $500,000 to closing to get out. Good news was I had $500,000. Bad news was that's all I had. That pretty well tapped me out. I think I had like $5,000 left when we were done to my name. So we got that finished, and my wife and I are sitting around that next night, and we're like, well, all right, I guess we just go get another house and flip it. It's not like we don't know how to do that or have access to private capital or anything like that. But we realized that all we'd done for that past 7-8 years was create a high-paying job.
Right.
We learned how to do it. You know, we were buying them, fixing them, selling them. We were making money. But as soon as we needed a couple of months off, that business died in a rather spectacular fashion, actually.
Oh, wow.
We decided we were out. I'm not doing that anymore. No more buy, fix, and flip. If I had my way, I'd never flip another house again. And we reinvented our business. We got together with some other investors who were in a not dissimilar position. They had some experience. They'd been doing this a while, had partnerships go bad for various reasons. But they were done with that active fix and flip side. Instead, we were all about the long-term wealth. So it took us a while to reinvent it, but we created a company specifically designed to build the largest rental portfolio we possibly could as fast as possible. And in 2020, during your COVID shutdown, we brought 118 units. So maybe a little more than some of the folks you've talked to, a little less than some of your large commercial guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So that just kind of gets you kind of in that sort of mid-market area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it's, we found it's kind of a sweet spot for us. It's between $1 and $4 million in our particular little niche in the world. Below the million, there's 100 other investors fighting for what those properties. Above 4 million, there's 100 CEOs who are just, you know, writing $10 million checks out of their checking account to pick up these properties. But at the 1 to 4, we're too little for the big guys and we're too big for the little guys. It's an absolutely wonderful place for us to be playing.
Right. Yeah. So then you just kind of facilitate all of those deals and make sure it all goes through. And then people can kind of invest in real estate fairly easily.
Well, at first it wasn't for anybody else. It was just for us.
Right. Right.
And to buy rental property, you need to have four things. You got to know a market that cash flows and the location has to be right. You have to have the financing to buy it.
Right.
You have to have the management in place or it's not passive at all. And then last, you have to have the access to the deals. When we buy for ourselves, you can figure out all four of those things. But if you do it fast enough or long enough, you will run out of money.
Right.
Buying is a short-term plan. So we built this entire infrastructure around acquiring tons of property, and then we eventually would run out of money. Yet we had lots of investors we would go to, and we would basically ask them, would you like to invest with us? Would you like to lend us money? Can we sell you some notes? And we had a bunch of them come back to us with, hey, I'll never lend you a penny, but this deal looks awesome. How much do you want for it?
Oh, wow. Wow, wow, wow.
And at first, I was pretty offended by that because we worked real hard for those. But we got over it after the second or third guy asked us. And we figured out a model where we could put a little margin in for ourselves, but still leave plenty of meat on the bone for our investors and give them the infrastructure that we built for ourselves. So now they get to invest just like we do with none of the hard work.
Very cool. Yeah. So as you were building this out then, I mean, since you're managing all of these properties, since you are dealing with investors, what are some of the strategies that you use that help you grow that business, the systems that you have in place that keep you from, like you were saying before, having a high paying job, right? Like, how do you avoid that? What are some of the systems you use to avoid that with this particular business?
So with rental property, management is the difference between the really crappy tenants' toilets and trash job of being a landlord.
Right.
And a mostly passive investment. The piece that is not passive with that then is bookkeeping.
Okay.
So you can hire a bookkeeper pretty easy. So if you want 100% passive, then you just need a decent manager. Actually, you need a great manager and a pretty good bookkeeper. If you can secure those two pieces, you'll be good to go. Then you can buy as much as you want, and all you're ever going to do is look at P&L statements monthly.
Right. Okay. Very cool. So, and that's kind of what you've done here with this coast to coast turnkey is kind of make that accessible to everybody. Is that correct?
Well, correct.
Everybody who can afford to get in. All of the
investors. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, and I'll tell you what, that's a great point. That was a massive decision point for us. There are other turnkey providers in the country. There's quite a few of them. And one of the things we were very careful that we didn't want to do is we did not want to deal with single unit investors. Okay. So if you want to buy your, you want to buy your first property, we're not your people. Please don't call me. I really can't talk to you.
Right.
And the reason being, one of our partners ran a turnkey company for 8 years and was very successful, sold it and swore he'd never do it again. Then he partnered with us. Now he does more than he ever has before. But the reason that it, that business became painful to him was the people who bought one or two units. So a reality of the rental game is we end up with vacancies and repairs. That's just the nature of this particular beast.
Right.
Well, if I only have one or two units, let's say I have two. If one of my units goes vacant, I'm at 50% vacancy. If apartment.com goes to 50% vacancy, they will be bankrupt tomorrow. So some of the, that is unsustainable. It doesn't work. We right. will be losing money. And that's a single point of failure. It was really important to us that we dealt in a minimum portfolio size where at least one unit could go vacant or need a significant turnover, and the other units can cover the holding cost. In my market, the smallest place that math works, the bare minimum to barely scrape by, is five doors.
Okay. So one of your strategies with this has been to be very, very careful about and run the numbers and make sure you know exactly where those points are. And also one of your strategies is to know exactly who you are designed to serve.
Yes. Yes. Very clear. Very, very clear. It's, there's a whole thing out there. It's all over entrepreneur circles is to fire your customers, right?
Right.
It's a lot easier to only hire the right ones.
Fair enough. So part of it is rather than trying to like appeal to everybody, your main strategy is, like you said, you're in this kind of middle sweet spot, where somebody who's a really big player isn't going to want to be, but somebody who's a small player not going to want to be. And then you're also very intentional about like, okay, you need to have at least this many doors. This is what you're going to be investing in. And then you also are very intentional about, you know, like you said, staying away from like first time real estate investors, or at least real estate investors who aren't going to be ready to make that sort of larger commitment. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah. And large is relative, isn't it?
Right. Of course. Of course.
It's the cost of, we operate primarily out of Pittsburgh. The cost of five properties in Pittsburgh, would be somewhere in the vicinity of $500,000. With our financing, the buy-in for that is about $150K. Okay. That's not even a down payment on a property in LA. Right. We're below the median. So, and that's many of our investors come from places like that where they cannot buy cash flow, or even if you could, you shouldn't, because the state laws don't really allow for a business friendly experience.
That's fair. Right? Okay. That makes sense. So you kind of know who that target is and you kind of go straight for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are some of the obstacles that you have had to overcome while building this? Now we know that you, what got you to this point was this huge obstacle of having all of your loans called in, like all of your notes called in at once. But as you were building this turnkey, you mentioned before you have a few partners. You don't just have one partner, you have a few partners. Are there any sort of like obstacles that you have to like push through to work with that many people? Are there obstacles you guys had to overcome as you were setting up your business? What are some of the challenges that you faced while you were getting things ready to go?
It's a great question. We deal with challenges every day. As far as we're concerned, we get paid to solve problems.
Okay.
What I would say is maybe a little different about the specific partnership I'm in is that every one of our partners has come out of a failed partnership for a different reason. We've all failed at this game. And we brought all the reasons for those failures to the table when we created our partnership. Okay. And we didn't allow any space for those things to exist. So each of our partners has an extremely clear role and swim lane, and we don't go outside it. And within that role, while we're happy to help each other out, whoever's role that is completely 100% in charge.
Okay.
So I'm, for example, I'm marketing and sales. One of my partners right now is helping me put together a little sales presentation on a portfolio. She's doing it because I asked her. She doesn't have to do it. It's certainly not her job. It's mine to get it done, but she's just happy to help out. And again, if it doesn't get done, it's not her problem. It's mine. So it's extremely clear responsibilities. Would be an ongoing big one.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, are there any other things that you've run into? What does it take kind of to set up? I mean, you mentioned, state laws in some places like California may not be as friendly, but it works out okay in mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. So what are some of the things that you have to think about when you're setting up a business like this?
I suppose, like any other business, you need to understand the product you're selling, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not going to do this remotely. If you're going to do a turnkey business, you're going to provide it remotely. And your defining items there are going to be the ability to acquire the inventory. If I sell 100 to 150 units a month, when most people in my market couldn't buy two properties to save their soul, we have to have a significant market share and a really robust marketing department to pull that off.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So if you are not like, if you can't buy rehabs, like other people buy candy, you probably don't want to get into the kind of volume I do.
Right.
You gotta be pretty good. The financing defines the deal. Financing is everything. These things don't tend to make sense in cash. It's not a great idea. We want our buyer's money to go as far as possible. And that lender will make or break everything because every buyer you have is going to have to go to that lender. If their underwriting sucks, then it kills your deal. So you got to have that sorted out. The returns that you're promising your investors are going to be based on the terms that your lender gives you. So you don't just need a good one, you need a great one. And you better know them extremely well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so trying to find that lender is probably one of the biggest issues, right? Making sure you've got somebody who you know you can trust, who you know is probably going to approve most of your deals and mm-hmm. yeah, and who is happy to just keep moving through, right?
Yep. Yeah. And it's and I'm not sure how many other ways you can do it. The way we did it is we borrowed a lot of money until we found somebody who did it right. You got to go through them. And that's mm-hmm. and that's what makes them believe that you're serious as yeah. well. You start to they write some loans with you, they work, and then you say, hey, do you like people like me? I can bring you other people like me. We'll still underwrite the deal. You'll still have the same risk profile that you have now. The assets will be similar. And then you can start fleshing out a relationship that'll allow you to get rid of those returns to other people.
All right. Very cool. So as you were going through this, did you have any family or friends that were helping you with the business? I mean, you mentioned that your wife and you did this together. Is this like, were there other family and friends involved when you choose one of your partners? Are they people that you know in your personal life or did you come across them in some sort of business kind of way?
Great question. So my wife and I did the flipping. That's how we came up. So that partnership has its own separate set of struggles, right? Being a partner with your spouse. Again, I recommend extremely clear roles at a bare minimum and do not step on each other's toes. Stay in the swim lane. Okay. That is its own struggle. As for family and friends, no. In fact, my wife and I talk about this all the time. We have lost almost every friend we had as our socioeconomic status changed.
Wow.
The people that we came up with, that we grew up with, they don't understand what we're doing. We have very little in common with them. The things they want to talk about, it just fades away. It wasn't some big blowout fight or anything, but you separate in interests from those kind of folks. And so for anybody who's going to go on this path hard, and I don't care if you're doing this kind of business or just anything that causes your income to increase drastically and build wealth and bring you to a different place in life, I would suggest that folks who don't share that journey with you are probably going to fade out of your life quite a bit.
And then did you have any of them kind of, I mean, you said some of them don't understand what you're doing. Did you have any of them maybe give you some bad advice or tell you what you were doing wrong or not, you know, I mean, is some of that just like a little bit of friction too, where people are like, are you crazy? What are you doing? Like, do you ever get any of that?
Not anymore. At first, yes, there was some of that. And most of it wasn't you're crazy.
Right.
Occasionally they would counter whatever strategy we were doing with, you know, whatever they had heard or thought instead. But more it was just a straight up lack of understanding and lack of desire to understand what we were doing. It didn't make a lot of sense, right? So it can be difficult for people to find a commonality with you as you go through that. One rule that we have now, I don't take business advice from anybody who doesn't make more money than me.
Fair enough.
It's when people come to us, I'm all for coaching. That's how we got started. I have no problem paying for that kind of stuff. I think it's totally worth it. We do it to this day. I just got back from a mastermind. But one of my first questions, if anybody ever solicits me for that kind of thing, how many deals do you do and how much money do you make? If it's not a higher number than me, we can totally chat real estate, but you will not be getting me to pay you for advice.
Yeah, I think that's a really great rule of thumb. And I mean, you mentioned that it's totally worth it to pay for the coaching, pay for, you know, participate in those masterminds, do that. But like you said, it makes sense if they can actually provide something for you. And so that way, when you're paying for that kind of coaching, it's really more of an investment back into your business.
Exactly. And I'll put the other edge of that sword out there too. The further ahead somebody is from you, the less capable they are of crossing that communication gap to the problems you're dealing with today. I would absolutely love if I could sit down with Elon Musk. The chances of him giving me life-changing information on my business are not very high because he's dealing in billions and I'm not.
Right.
The kind of issues he's have are just simply at a different level. That's not to say we couldn't benefit greatly from that conversation. At least I could. But I would be way better off if I'm trying to get my business to go, let's just say, for example, when I'm flipping houses, the fight is, can I make $1 million? If I find somebody who's steadily making $1 million, that's a very valuable contact to me. If I want to go to $10 million, okay, cool. Now I'm at $1 million. Let's find somebody who's doing 10, not 50, not 100, 10, right? And then how about 10 to 50? So you find somebody who's at the next logical step, but not so much further ahead that they're speaking a different language.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So with that in mind and talking about finding coaches and mentors, if you were going to tell somebody, considering getting their start in real estate, what would you tell them to do?
House hack. If you're a newbie and you've never done this before, go buy a 4-unit building with an FHA loan and live in it. Rent out the other three. I mean, if you were in your 20s, you are out of your mind not to do that. Beg, borrow, and steal the like $20,000 it'll cost you. Who cares? And go set yourself up with an asset that in 20, 30 years is going to be worth $750,000. It's just the way that they should be doing it. And within a year or two, you can do it again. You do that once or twice, you can keep up your 9-to-5. You can do all that other fun stuff, flip a house or two. But if you want to build wealth, house hack one or two.
Very cool. And it gives you a little bit of experience in real estate without taking a huge risk.
And if you're further along in your career, you're closer to retirement, you got some capital, that kind of thing, then you probably want to talk to somebody like me. And I'm going to take your money and I'm going to turn it into real estate and we're going to give you the infrastructure with it.
Nice.
and you'll get that return. But that's kind of a, it's a bit of a different level. Most 20-year-olds don't invest with us.
Right. But I think that goes back to your earlier point about like, hey, let's start with this step, get good at this step, then go find the next step. And you're kind of that next step after you've done some of that house hacking, after you've done that for a few years, then they have the capital to turn it over to you, and it's less labor intensive for them. And they can really kind of, take that cash flow, take that investment, take that wealth building up to the next level.
Absolutely. Phenomenal. It's we've said before, we've been asked to do coaching by several people. And we don't do that. We don't provide it. I give away all of my information for free. You want to know something? I'll just talk to you. It's fine. But if we were to do something like that, it would not be how to get your first deal. I would not coach those people. There are lots of professionals out there. That's what they do. And they do it very well. I played that game. We're more into, okay, now you've learned to do a deal or three. How do we crack that first million and get into that 10? That's where I'm at.
Yeah. So. Very cool. Yeah. I love that idea of knowing who you serve and just being laser focused on knowing who you serve, serving them. And then in that way, everybody kind of wins in this business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. And everything's built like, you can model your company, at least in the broad sense, after the most successful companies we got, right? So mine is, the big picture is some combination between Apple and Tesla. Apple doesn't make any money when you buy an iPhone, but they do make money when you buy the next 12 iPhones.
Right.
I don't really make a lot of money when you buy 5 properties off of me. I make my money when you buy the next 95 properties off me.
Very nice.
Same idea.
Yeah, very cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This is Brian Fine from Coast to Coast Turnkey. Real quick, tell us one more time where they can find you.
You can find us on our website, which is coasttocoastturnkey.com, and that is with the number 2. And I got some webinars on there with classes, like how we do the financing and that kind of fun stuff that you can check out. And phone numbers on there as well.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much again for joining us today, Brian. Thank you all for tuning in for today's episode. We hope you'll hit that subscribe button. And then once again, come back, listen to us again next time here on Hometown Real Estate Heroes.
This is Mitch Stephen, and I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning into the Hometown Real Estate Heroes podcast. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please go to 1000houses.com/podcasts, the number 2, /apply. We invite all our listeners to share our Hometown Real Estate Heroes podcast, and also we'd appreciate it if you'd rate and or review our show wherever you listen to your podcasts. It would be greatly appreciated. It is our mission to spotlight local real estate entrepreneurs that are killing it in their market and to highlight their strategies and their personal story. It is our intention to help real estate investors learn and grow. Please be sure to subscribe, because we are sure that you will find very valuable nuggets in our content-driven episodes. This podcast is my way of giving back, and I would like to personally thank all of the Hometown Real Estate Heroes that have participated or that intend to participate. And I'd like to thank all of our listeners and hope that you tune in and share this with your friends and family often. Thank you very much. We're out of here.